Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I know one of the holidays that everybody loves to celebrate, and I understand that the connotation of Labor Day means you can't get away with wearing white shoes after Labor Day. And I don't know how many people wear white shoes anymore. But actually, there's a lot more involved in Labor Day. And it is a holiday that I usually rant about because this is a holiday that has no American roots. This holiday comes from Germany. The origins of this holiday actually go all the way back to ancient Greece and the concept of Plato's Republic and statism. However, we're going to get into the origins of Labor Day for people, and this is going to be one that I will probably do every year, just due to the fact that I have, let's just say, disdain for this day. If you understand, if you are a employer and you have a business and you're struggling, you're trying to treat your employees great, you're trying to do everything right, and then all of a sudden government comes along and dictates that you have to give your employees a day off, regardless of how well you treat them, regardless of, you know, all the problems that you have to bake in non-productive salary. In other words, you're paying somebody for doing nothing. And so I think that that's the heavy-handed tactics of government, and that's what government gets away with. Remember, only government gets away with tyranny and the worst types of oppression, murder, and what have you. And we're going to actually get into, you know, government murdering and so forth, supposedly. But, and all of this basically churns around Labor Day. But as I was going to say, and I keep on getting back to this whole thing, Labor Day, I just ask that you remember that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and any type of evidence that actually proves an irrefutable argument for Republic Review. The only course of action that we have. I've yet to see anything else. There is no other action. There is, let's say, buying time. As a matter of fact, I talked to a person that is championing their cause, and they go, yeah, I agree with yours, what you're doing, but I'm going to continue to support this cause because it buys us time. It doesn't buy them time, and that is the biggest fallacy I see. As a matter of fact, if you look at, in different directions, if you look at the different threats that we're facing from our education system and the useful idiots that they're pumping into the voter block. If you look, and as a matter of fact, what I'm going to do is I'll probably go out and get a really good detailed graph of the demographics so that you can actually look at how many people alive in America today are in what age groups, whether that be a five-year graph, a two-year graph, or what have you, so that you can really see where our problem lies, and our problem lies in our youth. And I had a really good conversation with a young man that actually helps me out. I pay him, and I pay him really good money. And we were talking about, you know, the problems of America and so forth. And I said, your generation and the kids that are being pumped into, you know, our voter blocks, into the electorate, working and so forth, you your kids or you kids are going to be responsible for destroying our liberty and our Constitution. And he absolutely agrees. But that's because he happens to live in a conservative family, in a, you know, in a red area where you still can hear some truth. But I'm telling you what, anybody, and as a matter of fact, there is, and I've told you that there are these, what do you want to call them, demagogues that are progressives that are claiming that, you know, there's this vast right wing, you know, white supremacist, evil group of people in this area. And, you know, there may be some evil people in this area, but I'm going to tell you that what I've seen, because I know lots of the conservatives in this area, and what I've seen, it isn't the conservatives that are evil. And it is those who are creating this facade that they're conservative and getting people to vote. And I just can't believe that the sheriff in this area is constantly being reelected. But with that, let me just keep moving. If you cannot listen to this entire show as we rant about Labor Day or the communist holiday that we're celebrating, then dial the listen line, and it's 605-562-4209, and you will be able to hear every word until the end of this show. This is the listen line, 605-562-4209. Now, I know I did a couple of the shows of marketing, and we kind of talked about the things that are going on, and I'll probably get back to that. But what I do need to do is I want to give you a good perspective on the origins of Labor Day, because most people do not understand the origins of Labor Day. The concept of having a holiday, a mandatory holiday with pay, is just ludicrous to me. I think it's one thing that a company negotiates benefits. And, you know, large companies that can actually do that, you know, that's great. But small companies, they can't. They basically can only pay you for the hours you work, and then they're being forced to try to have to pay you for hours you're not productive. The progressive policies are destroying small businesses as red states turn to blue, because as they turn to blue, they start implementing these types of laws, and the regulations and everything else drive these mom and pop businesses completely out of business. Or they have to go dark. They have to go into the black market, and they have to pay cash, and they have to start hiding from government. And this plays right into exactly what Adam Smith was talking about during, or in his book, The Wealth of Nations. He says, who do you blame if all of a sudden, you know, government becomes so oppressive that people are having to skirt their taxes and work around, find workarounds to not have to give up their property to government? And when I mean property, I mean money. So who do you blame? Do you blame the criminal or the person that is, you know, trying to find the path of least resistance to just get ahead? Because he points out that it is innate in all of us. It is within our genetic makeup that we all want to make our lives a little bit better than our fathers and or mothers, and we want our children to have a much better life than we did. And I'm telling you, folks, if you have that innate desire in your heart to make things better for yourself, make your lot better, and ensure that your children have a better opportunity than you, then you're failing. Because the only thing that we can do that can secure their liberty is republic review. And there's really no other way around this. We're heading into the grips of global slavery and or communism. We're going to get into a Mises perspective on that, but let me also grovel a little bit. If you want to support this show, you can go out and buy Red State Coffee, get your grind, get your whole beans, and grind up your beans yourself. If you don't drink coffee that much, that may be a better way to go. But if you buy Red State Coffee, they will be supporting the show. They are one of the few sponsors that we actually have that actually supports this show. So we would ask that you would consider supporting the show by getting your Red State Coffee on. And then every time you listen to the show, drink a little bit of your Red State Coffee. We also have a GoFundMe campaign out there, and it is on our website. So both links to both the Red State Coffee and the GoFundMe campaign is right there on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. More importantly, we need your help in getting you involved in doing things such as becoming a leader in your county. We would like to convince you that you can become a state legislator. We have full faith and confidence that you have the ability to actually lead on the principles of the Constitution. And we're here to help you. Just so send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we will do whatever we can in helping you. And we're hoping that by the next election season, we'll be able to drive money towards those who are willing to commit to resigning from their position if they violate the Constitution and or they do not stand up and support the Constitution. And so that's what we need. We need 100% compliance to the Constitution by the federal government before these useful idiots for this Bolshevik revolution takes place and they demand that we set aside the Constitution and embrace global slavery. So with that, let me also just quickly state, because we're already going to break. Well, let me quickly state that thank you for tuning in. If you're not tuning in and you're not helping the show grow, then we're not getting the word out. So we'd be failing. So we recognize the fact that it is you, the listener, that helps the show grow. Thank you so much for doing that. And thank you for helping this show grow by letting other people know about it. We will be right back after this word of sponsors. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so as I was running out of time once again, going into our sponsorships and promos, I tend to have a problem just shutting up because there's just so one more word, one more thought. So forgive me for kind of meandering into the promos. But what I do want to talk about is as I've told you at the very beginning, I want to get into the origins of Labor Day, and I want to give you a good perspective of the origins of, because what is Labor Day? Well, what's May Day? Actually, let's put it in a grander perspective. Is there such a thing as a labor party? Yeah. Yeah, there's a labor party. And the understanding of the labor party is it's the communist party throughout the world. What is the labor party in America? It's the Democratic Party. It's what the unions support. And if you understand unions, the whole concept of unions is what? Collectivizing labor negotiations. And it's about collectivism. It is a huge tenet of the Communist Manifesto. And the concept actually came from the late 1700s, because when Adam Weishaupt wrote his charter for the Illuminati and how they were going to move forward in taking control of the world, that exact same year, three documents, I will share this with you, three documents were generated in 1776. We know the Declaration of Independence was one, and it was basically forging a future of liberty here in America, and hopefully leading that liberty charge in the world. And then the second document that was written and produced in 1776 was Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, where Adam Smith was clearly articulating a new path forward in creating a free market and breaking away from a mercantile system and or a controlled system. And I will tell you, if you compare the mercantile system, which it had its problems, and it was draconian in every essence of the word, the mercantile system was the Britain system, and it is typically, it was the Egyptian system. It was the Roman system. The mercantile system is where government dictates you grow this and you grow that, and maybe not the Roman system per se, but definitely the Egyptian system. But if you understand, government wanted to make sure that they were getting everything that they needed. And so they managed who would produce this, and so forth. And Britain was a mercantile system. Now, if you compare the mercantile system to the free market system, the free market just expanded the entire growth of wealth in the world. More nations became wealthy and prosperous because of the free market system. There has been no nation that has been really wealthy, or when I say nation, I mean the people, not the government, the people. More people are breaking away from the middle class, or I should say poverty level, and even Americans in poverty live much better in the quality of standards of life. I mean, almost every American has air conditioning. Most Americans, you know, have amenities that people couldn't even dream of in some of these third world nations. But the other economic system that is the prevalent system that is being sold as this is what we want to the kids, and the kids are beginning to demand, we want this, is communism. Communism is it's very similar to a mercantile system, but it isn't just a system of production and who produces what. It is a system of consumption as well. Most people don't even see that because it is not a plank. But they clearly control the means of consumption. They'll take products away, bury it, or throw it away so that you can't consume it. They control both ends of this process, not just the production of it, but the consumption of it as well. And if you look at the history of how many people have died from these different types of systems, well, the mercantile system probably has its share of oppression and really a lot of grief in different societies, but it hasn't this huge long list of people that have died from the oppression of government in controlling the production as well as the consumption, as we have seen in China and as we have seen in Russia, as well as in Cambodia and so forth. I mean, we're talking millions of people. And so there has never been such an oppressive government concept of economics than communism. Just got to be clear on that. And we'll get into that a little bit more, especially when we get into the Communist Manifesto. But the origins of Labor Day in the United States of America is a public holiday celebrated on the first Monday in September. It honors the American, now this is Wikipedia here, it honors the American labor movement. Did you hear this? American labor movement. Well, was that something that was actually generated in America? Or was this a movement that permeated into America, took hold, and started to grow? You got to understand, the communes of the late 1700s in France was the first communist revolution. And what was supposed to happen was they were supposed to basically institute communism in France. They had one little problem. There was this little demagogue, and I mean little demagogue, his name was Napoleon, and he used his demagoguery to rise to power. And he was successful in thwarting the first communist revolution. The next attempt in communism was the soft spin called socialism, and that was actually in Germany by Otto von Bismarck. And that failed. I mean, it failed miserably because they just didn't have the wealth they needed. Anyway, the next communist revolution was the successful one, which was the Bolshevik Revolution. And then communist revolutions have been taking over from that point on into China, Cambodia, Cuba, all these different nations have fell to communism, even Venezuela. So anyway, so it's this American labor movement that they call it, but I'm telling you, this is an international movement, and the power of collective action by laborers who are essentially for the workings of society. This is an ideological thing, and I know that I upset people that work for the unions, and please, put aside your bias for a minute and start understanding, why don't we do collective bargaining for everything? Why don't we do collective assertions for everything? Because that would be the same thing as mob rule. That would be the same thing as communism. Because what happens, and this is how people don't understand anarchy. Anarchy is strictly a tool that is used to allow somebody to seize power. There is no way anarchy ever has thrived in the world. You know, it may have thrived, you know, back when it was just a couple of people that lived in an area and people just did what they wanted to do. But anarchy in a well-populated society is just a tool that is used by the communists. It is used by monarchs. It is used by tyrants and despots. And history only proves this out. So anyway, Labor Day is the Monday of the long weekend known as the Labor Day weekend or the last weekend of summer. Because obviously just around the corner we have it's the equinox, which I think is the autumnal equinox. Anyway, beginning in the late 19th century, as the trade union and labor movements grew, trade unionists proposed that a day be set aside to celebrate labor, and they called it Labor Day. And it was promoted by the Central Labor Union and the Knights of Labor, which organized the first parade. So in other words, the origins of this came from those who were promoting communism in America. Because if you understand this whole centralizing and collectivism is just code word for communism. And so anyway, they organized the first parade in New York City in 1887. And I believe that was before that, but in 1887, it was 1884 is when that that parade was actually organized and executed. And in 1887, Oregon was the first state of the United States to make it an official public holiday. And by the time it became an official federal holiday in 1894, 30 states in the United States officially celebrated Labor Day. Well, if you understand how many people were laborers at that point in time, and if you understand, you know, Oregon and what was the prominent labor force in Oregon, well, it was probably logging, and it was collectivized labor, that and or shipments such as the rail systems and so forth. And so the concept of collectivizing labor really started spreading big time in America, and it was brought to us by the European concept of collectivizing. And this, like I said, the unions and that union movement really began in the late 1700s. Anyway, I don't want to keep on going on. So what we'll do is we will come right back and we'll talk more about Labor Day after this promo. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Now, one of the things that I kind of mentioned earlier is that Labor Day, and there was a uniqueness to this, because you got to understand, May Day actually came first. And so May Day was effectively 1886 before people said, hey, you know, we don't want to celebrate May Day, because they realized how radical that was. But let's talk a little bit about Labor Day versus May Day. The date of May 1, an ancient European folk holiday known as May Day, emerged in 1886 as an alternative holiday for the celebration of labor. And this was, again, in Europe. Later becoming known as the International Workers' Day. International, see? And they're trying to make this a global appeal. But it is, and it is a global appeal, because it is a global effort of communism. Remember, America was to fall to communism because Nikita Khrushchev clearly stated that they didn't have to fight a war, that upon principle after principle of socialism, we will embrace every tenet of communism. And we'll get into that as well. The date had its origins at the 1885 convention of the American Federation of Labor, which passed a resolution calling for the adoption of the 8-hour day effective May 1st, 1886. While negotiation was envisioned for achievement of a shortened work day, it also was using the concept of a strike to enforce this demand be recognized, with May 1 advocated as a day for coordinated strike action. The proximity of the date to the bloody Haymarket affair, or what they call the Haymarket Massacre, we'll get into that in just a second, that occurred May 4th in 1886 as well, which further accentuated May 1st's radical reputation, or the recognition of what collectivism really is. So what we had to do is we had to put a smiley face on this form of celebrating communism in America, or the concept of collectivizing and growing collectivism in America. But let's first go into that Haymarket. What is that Haymarket affair that I also said was known as the Haymarket Massacre? Well, the Haymarket affair was the aftermath of a bombing that took place at a labor demonstration on May 4th in 1886 at Haymarket Square in Chicago. It began as a peaceful rally in support of workers striking for an 8-hour workday. The day after, police killed 8 workers. An unknown person threw a dynamite bomb at the police as they acted to disperse the meeting, and the bomb blast and ensuing gunfire resulted in the death of 7 police officers and at least 4 civilians. Dozens of others were wounded. Now, so here's my problem with how they just described all of this. Well, they said that there were, 8 people that were killed by the police officers. That's what they just said. And then they said that the total ended up ensuing the deaths of 7 police officers and at least 4 civilians. Where's those other 8? Anyway, sometimes people don't put all of the important information together, and one has to allude to the fact that, maybe they really didn't kill those people. I don't know. But I'm here to tell you that police back in those days were a lot different than police today. I have a hard time understanding why, police would just kill people. But let's just say that they did. Let's just say that this all went down the way it was just described. The whole point to me is that this collectivizing of labor and this demanding and these strikes and so forth, that was a very powerful concept that was sweeping America. Collectivism was sweeping America. And the concept of communism, or I would just say the concept of communism was like letting the genie out of the bottle, because most people saw, that's a good thing. But it isn't a good thing. It's the same thing with the tenets of communism, because most people look at this whole thing as a nirvana. Everybody's going to be equal. Everybody's going to have, a fair chance. When the reality is the state will then dictate everything. No operation for you because we can't afford it for you. The state literally dictates. If you give me somebody that wants to actually tell me how great communism is, then let them try, even if it's you. If you can explain how when Pol Pot took over Cambodia and turned their government into a communist regime, and when he rounded up all the educated people, 1 million educated people, and killed them, put them into mass graves, how that was a good thing for the Cambodians. I'm kind of curious as how you can make those two connections. It's the same thing with Stalin or Lenin. Same thing with Mao. None of these men, because when you have the ultimate power, now you have the force of the state to dictate and control the production of everything and the consumption of everything. you've basically control it all. See, most people think it's just about the controls of production. No, it is about all control, the control of production as well as consumption. So back to Labor Day versus May Day. There was a disagreement among labor unions at this time about when a holiday celebrating workers should be, with some advocating for continued emphasis for the September, March, and picnic date, while others sought the designation of the more politically charged date of May 1st. Now, Wikipedia identifies Democratic President Grover Cleveland as one of those who was conservative, and he basically admitted his concern that Labor Day on May 1st would tend to become a commemoration of the Haymarket Affair and would strengthen socialist and anarchist movements that back. I don't believe that that was his opinion. I believe that he wanted to actually keep people from making the associations, because you've got to understand that at this point in time, Democratic President Grover Cleveland was a collectivist. He supported this, just like Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge was a huge collectivist. He was a constitutionalist, though, and he knew he couldn't violate. If you read Calvin Coolidge's biography I forget the person's name, but if you read that biography of Calvin Coolidge, he comes right out and admits that he supported the labor movement. And what happened on his watch? He championed an amendment to the Constitution to give the federal government the ability to regulate labor. And that was in 1926. So most people think, oh, here's this great conservative. These guys were not conservatives. The only difference was that Coolidge, he understood the limitations of the Constitution and knew that they had to amend the Constitution. That's why he even went down that path. Grover Cleveland didn't even go down that path. Where in the Constitution do we have have we delegated to the federal government the ability to dictate holidays? Now, there were proclamations of like Thanksgiving and stuff like that, but that was not a dictate of a holiday. President Washington was just asking the entire nation to recognize one day of Thanksgiving and to put it into service for him. It was nothing to do with a forced labor holiday. And what Grover Cleveland was doing and his concept of creating a holiday for Labor Day was literally that concept of, let's see if we can keep people from putting two and two together by moving this out to September so that people don't relate it to the May communist movement. I believe that more true than him being concerned that it would grow socialism. It would allow socialism to bask in the shadows of our society instead of having to hide. In 1887, he publicly supported the September, and this is Grover Cleveland, September Labor Day holiday as a less inflammatory alternative. The date was formally adopted as a United States federal holiday in 1894, as I said before. Now, if you go read what is stated by Huffington Post basically states that most people know Labor Day as an extra day off, but fewer know the holiday comes from a time when government was offing workers. How disingenuous is Huffington Post? If you see an ad, if you see somebody putting a link in social media or anything else, and you notice it's a Huffington Post, it is the least credible information that you can find, because they're not telling you the whole concept of how the collectivist movement came into America decades before. You probably don't know this, but Procter & Gamble recognized the threat of unionizing. And so what they did was they made every employee a shareholder, and they started sharing profits to keep collectivism and unions from forming in Procter & Gamble's in the mid-1800s, I think 1860, 1870, something like that, in Ohio. Now, nobody tells you that, But what Procter & Gamble couldn't successfully do is they couldn't successfully get the employees to embrace these concepts of profit sharing and bringing and increasing the added value, because most of the employees at that point in time were illiterate and they were being bamboozled by this beautiful nirvana of collectivism. And so they started going down this path of demanding collectivism. So when we come back, I'm going to basically ask you a fundamental question. And so when we come back after the promo, that question is, and it'll have something to do with labor. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back after these promos. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so the fundamental question I have is, do I have a right? And when I say right, I mean a right like property in a job for somebody to employ you. Now, there are contracts that you can go into that can give you some rights based on the language of the contract, or basically give your employer rights. I'll give you a good example of that, because I've told you before, the perfect form of communism here in America is in the military. You willingly surrender so many years of your life, and you have no say. You can't strike. You can't quit. You can't walk out. If you do, you'll be held in contempt or held in violation of the contract and thrown in jail. That is, and that's why I say it's the perfect form of communism, because it's voluntary. But do you have a right like property in a job? Because if you remember, Marbury v. Madison actually argued, John Marshall was the one that asserted that when a person is offered a position with government, they have a right in that job. And I wholeheartedly disagree. That is a law that the federal government had no business, or John Marshall himself had no business in creating that precedence, because it wasn't allowed by the Constitution for them to do that. There was nowhere where they actually created this right in government work. It's not in the Constitution. It was a usurpation by the bench. But anyway, I digress. The fundamental question is, do we have a right like property and a job? And if we in America subscribe and are trying to conduct a free market, then heck no. If we have truly a free market. But there is a problem because we have some things that linger out there that, you know, have created barriers. Now, there are states that have right-to-work states, and a right-to-work state law is basically the legal ramifications of a right-to-work is where the states have laws that prohibit union security agreements between companies and labor unions. Under these laws, employees in unionized workplaces are banned from negotiating contracts which require workers to join the union. In other words, if you get a job in a right-to-work state and it happens to be a union shop, they can't force you or require you to join the union in working there. In other words, you can be a scab is based on the union. So this was one of the dents that we've put in collectivized labor. There's this other term called an at-will state or an at-will law, at-will employment. At-will employment is a term used for contractual relationships in which an employee can be dismissed by an employer for any reason, as long as it's not an illegal reason and or an unconstitutionally illegal reason. Because you got to remember that the federal government was never given the power to dictate whether somebody could be cruel or whether somebody could be immoral or what have you. The federal government doesn't have any abilities to regulate thoughts or anything like that. And so if you have just cause for terminating somebody, then that's fine. But this illegal firing is like firing, or this unconstitutionally illegal firing is firing somebody for their race, religion, or what have you. Now, the federal government has not amended the Constitution to allow them this authority, but they have created this law, okay? So if you happen to fire somebody because of their gender, because of their race, religion, or, you know, what they call protected statuses, then that's an illegal fire. But anyway, so in other words, an employer can actually fire somebody without warning as long, again, as it's not illegal. When an employee is acknowledged as being hired at will, courts should deny the employee any claim for loss resulting from the dismissal. The rule is justified by the proponents on the basis that an employee may be similarly entitled to leave his or her job without reason or warning. The practice is seen as unjust by those who view employment relationship as characterized by inequality or bargaining power, inequality of bargaining power. And so the collectivist and those ideological people really look at the at-will law as an evil law. But bottom line, for whatever reason, because you don't have any money or whether you don't like a person, and for whatever reason that is, it dawned on me that there's no doubt in my mind that the Lord wants us to kind of get along and that we're supposed to do the right thing. But people don't. People tend to do the wrong thing. And in context to employment, labor, employers, employees, relationships, and those types of things, people will do the wrong thing. The problem is that the Department of Labor was never constitutionally ratified. The Department of Labor and that concept of federal government regulating labor and having any hands in labor at all has never been ratified. In other words, it is an unconstitutional usurpation. Now, here's the thing. States absolutely have the right to do what they want to do. states can allow or not allow these types of things. If you don't like the way labor is shaping up in your state, then you can start creating laws. But the federal laws, any law that is coming from the federal level, I should say, is unconstitutional. So before we run out of time, I just want to, because I wanted to get into the 10 planks of Marxism, and I'm not going to be able to go through all of them, but I will just say this, that as you look at these different labor laws and labor period, and if you understand labor, see, Adam Smith saw labor as something very unique in every aspect of the individual, from the experience, from the education, and how that person can perceive things and innovate and those types of things that one laborer in the janitor shop of this huge facility may be, you know, far more innovative than the other. And that person has a much greater value just within the janitor shop. But Marx, well, I think he was a buffoon or just a raging idiot because he viewed all labor as equal. Marx actually went as far as to assert that doctors and janitors and the labor they perform are all equal. And so even the communist nations today can't swallow that pill because they still provide incentives for doctors and those people who have to go to school for 20 years. They have to incentivize them because it takes a lot of labor, a lot of effort in learning everything you need to become a doctor. It only takes a day or two or however long on the job, maybe a little book reading, processes or what have you, to be a janitor. Not that being a janitor is a bad thing, but I'm here to tell you that they are not equal. A brain surgeon and a janitor? That's why I say Marx was a buffoon to think that he could actually sell that to somebody. And there's lots of people that go out there and they read that, and which causes me to think I need to revisit the Billy Graham letter that he actually read. So maybe what we'll do tomorrow or in our next episode, because who knows, something could happen. I may not be able to broadcast tomorrow what I want to broadcast because it could be a comms problem. If you've noticed, there have been times where a rerun would play, and that's just because we had a comms problem in trying to get that thing out, our current show. So there's been times where we've actually been impacted. So instead of saying tomorrow, in our next live episode or new episode, what I want to do is I want to give you the 10 planks of communism. And then what I want to do is I want to read to you the letter that Billy Graham received from a university. I don't know if he was the dean or the regent, I don't know. Anyway, a gentleman gave him from the university a letter that apparently some communist or some kid that went to Mexico and got all tangled up in the communist and actually became a communist and stayed in Mexico, broke off his engagement with his fiance back at the school and said, you know, kind of like what Marlon Brando said during the Apocalypse Now, sell the wife, sell the kids, you know, sell the house, you know, sell everything because I'm not coming back. And the ideology and the paradigm, the wiring that occurred with this young man because he embraced these idiotic notions from Marx that all labor is equal. What they're really embracing is they're embracing the ability to take and seize control. And that needs to get your attention because they're very close to having that control. They're already controlling more facets of our life than they have any business doing, especially our federal government. And so with that, we will dive more into this communist perspective tomorrow. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.